Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. My colleague, Roman Fabricator, spoke with Dr. Nosheen Ahmed from the University of Kansas Medical Center about offering more flexible monitoring periods for patients who receive CAR T-cell therapy for lymphoma based on real-world study findings published in Blood Advances. Data showed that toxicities such as CRS and ICANS were rare at more than 2 weeks after infusion, supporting a possible two-week monitor period to help mitigate the potential financial and physical obstacles to CAR T-cell access.
So what was your rationale for this study?
Rationale for this study really started from my background in understanding more about access issues with CAR T. CAR T therapy is not your regular off-the-shelf drug that if I prescribe it, you just get it the next day. It's one of those therapies that has a lot of upfront investment with a patient's time, I would say, does carry some financial and physical, burden on the patient from the time of collection of the cells all the way up to the post, monitoring period. Some of my work that I'd done before actually demonstrated that there are groups of patients that are not able to get CAR T or have less likelihood of getting CAR T, such as those from lower socioeconomic class, those that may be from minority groups, ethnic and racial minority groups, especially African American groups. And so I've demonstrated that like in 2022 in one of my papers, as well as in 2024, just recently that publication in TCT. We also found that there are some other groups of people, such as those living more than 2 hours from the treatment center, that may not have adequate access to CAR T. So putting it all together, the thought was that, like, is there any part of this whole CAR T process that can contribute to like the physical and financial burden without being of much value? Like, is there anything that we can do to make it easier for the patients without compromising safety or efficacy, right? And the one thought that came to my mind was that we have these patients, they have to read, there's an FDA, the REMS mandate through the FDA, that they have to relocate to be within 2 hours of the center for up to 4 weeks, which is 28 days. And they should avoid driving for up to 8 weeks, which is 56 days from the day that they get their cell therapy. So it just came as a question. I mean, are those restrictions necessary? These were implemented back in 2017 when we had very little understanding of CAR T and how things are going to play out, and they were specifically put in place for monitoring for two of the what were initially unique toxicities of CAR T, which are neurotoxicity and cytokine release syndrome, so ICANS and CRS. And my study found, and this is a study of 475 patients with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma who either got axicell, tisacell, or lysacell. These are the three CAR T products, and they got it as standard of care. And we just wanted to see, do these toxicities occur up to the 4 week mark? Do they occur beyond that to justify those restrictions? We found that really after 2 weeks, the incidence of cytokine release syndrome was actually 0%, and the incidence of neurotoxicity was 1% beyond the 14 days. And so I think that our study, just based on this data, gives us some grounds to go and revisit those requirements and see if we can reduce that time to 2 weeks mandatory period and make it more flexible, so that patients and their doctors can decide how long the patient needs to be monitored beyond the 2 weeks. This might help access, because patients have to, if they have to relocate to be close to a center, I mean, the FDA mandate is 2 hours, but a lot of times our centers have even more strict mandates. Like, they say within 30 minutes or within 45 minutes or 60 minutes. So if you go to different centers, there'll be different requirements. So if the patient has to relocate, be closer to the center and bring a caregiver with them and then not be able to drive for 8 weeks, We wanted to see, I think our study said, pretty much demonstrates that this needs to be revised.
Okay, thank you. Obviously, you spoke earlier about ICANNs and CRS. So I was wondering, aside from those two metrics, can you provide a brief general overview of the results of your study?
We also explored the causes of death, because we wanted to know, from the other aspect of our study, was that while we are focusing on just neurotoxicity and CRS, our patients, are we missing something? Are patients dying of something else that they need to be monitored closely for 4 weeks? And we found that within the first 4 weeks, in the neurotoxicity and infections are the main causes of death. But beyond 4 weeks, we went up to 90 days. Beyond 4 weeks, you know, patients are not, the incidence of death doesn't go down. In fact, there's still patients dying, and they're dying of infections primarily. So that taught us, that was instructive in at least in two ways, I would say. One is that there's no magic to the number 28, right? Day 28. I think that this is a whole continuum of care for the patient. And a lot of times it's the primary referring physician that takes care, that takes over the care of the patient after the 28 days. And they may not be, you know, completely in tune of managing these infections or recognizing these infections or understanding the complications of CAR T therapy. And this data informs us that we need to have more of a collaborative approach with our referring doctors in order to improve survival of the patients. The answer is not to keep the patients near the center for you know, 90 days. The answer is more to allow them to go back to their homes and then empower and educate and involve and collaborate with their community doctors to improve their survivals. And we understanding whatever the, you know, and the level of involvement of the treatment center would be to the extent that that has to be individualized based on the infrastructure available locally and the expertise available locally.
As early onset CRS and ICANNs were observed, what do you propose should be the new monitoring guidelines?
So we see that there's the incidence of CRS and ICANNs is pretty much as expected and usually occurs within the first 2 weeks. So I think that monitoring can be inpatient or outpatient by the treatment center. Especially, I think it's important in the first 2 weeks that the patient is monitored very closely, which they are right now. Their patients are either admitted to the hospital for a period of time, or they're monitored almost on a daily basis with a 24/7 access to care, bypassing the ED for that period of at least 2 weeks or so. Beyond that, I think that it would have to depend on what's going on with the patient, right? Are their blood counts very low? Are they at a high risk of infection? Like, I think it has to be more individual decisions, whether the patient can really go back and transition back and stay home and be monitored locally. In this day and age, we're still monitoring them very closely by the treatment center. But I think that that can be more flexible and more individualized for each patient.
Are there plans to evaluate other CAR T cell therapies for adverse effects beyond the three that were listed in the study?
So our group has actually looked at multiple myeloma and looked at the two CAR T therapies that are available for myeloma, which is ide-cel and cilta-cel. And we just recently published that also in a journal of TCT. In which we again demonstrate that, you know, the REMS requirement for CRS and ICANN, as far as that goes, the incidence of the chances of that starting after 2 weeks is extremely low. But at the same time, and we also looked at what are the causes of death with the same question in mind with those constructs. And we found that in infections, again, was predominantly the reason for death, even in that population, for patients that had not progressed. I just want to make that clear, that for patients that had not progressed and when we're just looking at complications, it would be infections. There was also, in our multiple myeloma study, a different side effect that was not seen in our lymphoma study, which is called hemophagocytic syndrome. So immune therapy associated hemophagocytic syndrome. There were some deaths from that as well. With CAR T in general, that's one of the newer side effects that we're getting more and more aware of. the onset of that is sometimes a little beyond after the CRS. But at the same time, you know, I think that if a patient's doing well beyond 2 weeks, there's, you know, there's no reason to keep them, to keep monitoring. Like, they need to be monitored, but it can be done as a co-management with their primary doctors for patients. You know, it should be more individualized.
How should clinicians utilize the data and implement the data into their clinical practice?
Right now, we can't, we're still bound to the REMS mandates. We wouldn't be able to let patients leave or before 4 weeks, and we won't be able to tell them not to drive. I think that this would be, the next steps would probably be, you know, seeing if the FDA, what they think about this data and whether they think that this is enough evidence for them to reconsider their REMS mandates.
We've received varying responses to this type of question. Feel free to let me know if you are comfortable answering it. Can you comment on the recent findings that CAR T cell therapy may lead to secondary malignancies, and if this would affect using these drugs to treat patients?
That's a very good question. You know, my study did not capture second primary malignancies because the follow-up was just up to, you know, like, we just reported the day nine, up to day 90. So within the first 3 months, you don't see a lot of second malignancies. But there is some real-world data coming out there that, you know, even as early as within 2 years, you do see second primary malignancies. Mostly those second primary malignancies would be myeloid. Myelodysplasia or leukemia, skin cancers would be the second. And then I know the FDA had raised concern about T-cell malignancies because the thought is that if it's a CAR T and it's got a potential to become malignant and cause a T-cell malignancy, that is very rarely seen. And that itself is not a major concern, but I do think that the other second primary malignancies are something that we will be seeing more of as we use more of these therapies. So would that deter me from using CAR T therapy? I don't think so. I think that we have some more choices these days, like with bispecifics, but still the outcomes with CAR T therapy in lymphoma, in myeloma, are still better than the outcomes with some of these other drugs. So, you know, you have to think about the efficacy. You have to think about all those things when considering a therapy. And I think the patients should just be informed. They should just know what the risks are.
Okay, thank you for being willing to answer that question. You put that rather eloquently. Is there anything else that you'd like to highlight within your study or the findings?
No, I think that my main take home here is that that we have a lot in order to improve outcomes. Number one, for these patients who are getting CAR T, specifically, I think one of the areas where we can make a difference is probably infection prevention and infection management. And I have a feeling that the way things are just been divided into such clear blocks of like day 0 to 28, and then after that they go to the referring physician, and there has to be more of a hybrid model of care. There has to be more involvement of our referring doctors or community doctors in detecting and managing these infections, or working with the authorized center or the specialized center in order to bypass the ER and other strategies to help these patients. But if there's enough data to say that the patients do not need extra restrictions beyond 2 weeks, which is what our studies show, the lymphoma and the myeloma one, then I do think that reconsidering the requirements will be one step towards increasing access and decreasing disparities in access. There's many other things that can be done at many other levels, but I think this will be one of the things that I would be looking forward to seeing how that goes.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of CancerNetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at CancerNetwork.com and find us on Twitter at CancerNetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer-Network.